Hey, all, this is the professor from the Monday Morning Blues here on WLOY. I've got a great guest for you this week, Mr. Jimmy Bones Trombley, who's the keyboardist for Kid Rock, the Twisted Brown Trucker Band. He's behind Robert Bradley on Robert Bradley's Blackwater Surprise. He's done a whole lot of other interesting stuff we're going to talk about, and he has his own album, fantastic solo album, Snake Bitten Wandering, that came out in the end of last year. So, hey, Jimmy, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Happy Valentine's Day to
everybody. And to you. Thanks again for taking some time to chat. I know we had a little rescheduling issue because of the ice age we had down here last time we were going to do that.
You can't prevent the weather, right?
Yeah.
Not a problem at all. Must
make it interesting when you're touring too, especially this time of year.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We've had some interesting events come out of that.
Well, yeah, and you were just saying you guys are for a lot of this, you're able to fly between the gigs instead of having to bus and drive, so that probably helps a little bit.
That's really nice. It's a wonderful way to tour.
Yeah, a little more comfortable than back of the minivan.
Yeah, although sometimes I don't mind, you know, getting off stage and then being able to just, you know, kind of chill out on a tour bus and roll through the night. I don't mind that at all. That doesn't bother me.
Yeah, as long as you've got something comfortable and someone else taking the wheel.
Yeah, all I need is a Guinness and then my bunk, and you know, and I'm cool.
I know. We'll talk at the end of this about where you're going to go while you're down here in Baltimore. We got some good beer places.
Oh, cool. All
right. It's a lot of craft beer things going on here that are pretty impressive.
Beautiful.
So I want to start off right away just with saying how impressive this album was. I know you got a lot of background and a lot of material to draw from and experiences. So it wasn't like this was a first album out of nowhere as a teenager, but it's got a great sound, a lot of diversity of style. It's everything kind of from blues to Southern rock. There's fantastic guitar playing. You've got a ton of local Detroit talent. One of the things I always do when I get an album is start looking through to see who's playing on it. And I was rather impressed to find, I mean, not only you got the guys from the Rockets and the Howlin' Diablos, so you got kind of the local great Detroit bands, but Wayne Kramer from the MC5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wayne's a friend. I was very blessed to have him on, and he came into town to do something that he represents, and it's his thing called Jail Guitar Doors. And what it is, it's his organization, and what he does is he raises money and he provides guitars for incarcerated men and women, and they, you know, if they show promise he feels that it's a great way of rehabilitating them. He provides guitars for them, but they've got to apply themselves. They actually have to learn to play the thing and learn to do it well, and they actually have to start producing some music out of this, maybe put on a show, whether it's live shows, recording something. So he's just not just throwing guitars at people, man. They've got to produce something out of it. They got to give back, too.
That's a pretty fantastic
program. It's a very
program.
Worthwhile thing. So he was in town doing a fundraiser for that, and that involved some really great people. Gary Rasmussen was on the gig, who, you know, Gary played in versions of the Stooges, and he's played on a lot of Patti Smith recordings and worked with her live. And, you know, he's played with Scott Morgan from the Rationals fame, and a later band of Scott's called Scott's Pirates, and just doing a lot of stuff like that. Gary was on it. Tino Gross, who produced my record and played a lot of the drums. He's kind of split the drumming duties between he and Johnny B. Badanjic. So they were all on the gig. And Wayne was in town. So Tino's like, hey, man, come on over and you want to check out Bones' record. And before we knew it, Wayne Kramer's like picking up a guitar and he's like, I like this. Let's track on this one. Let's track on that. And then there was one song on it. I think it was it Bring It On Over? And he's like, hey, there's no bass on this. Hand me that bass over there. He ended up playing bass on that track.
That's the one he's all over the wah on that one.
He did a lot of that wah guitar on there, did that. And then he ended up throwing bass on it as well. He plays some really, really tasty, very bluesy stuff on, you know, even bordering on jazzy kind of blues vibe on When It's Your Turn to Cry. Mm-hmm. And that also has Tony Gagné, who's Bob Dylan's longtime bass player and musical director, playing bass on it too. So, yeah, I was very fortunate to have, you know, some friends play on this that are... Let's call them musical icons as far as players.
I'd say so, yeah. So yeah. Were you doing that as sort of live group sessions, or was it a little bit more, here it is, play your track?
Some of it was, a lot of it was recorded in this manner because I wanted to be able to, play things either just me and the piano and singing. So what I did is I laid down the original bed tracks as just piano driven songs and laid a scratch vocal down. And some of it, we built it from there, you know?
Yeah.
And really the way the arrangements are on the record are the way I laid down the original demo tracks. And most of those tracks have the piano on them is the original, my original bed track that I laid down as a map for the song.
Yeah,
and then everybody started, stacking up all their stuff on it. And, there was some stuff where, we did it as, just a guitar, bass, drums,
Yeah. I mean, so. It feels like more of it was done that way, or maybe it's just you guys play together so much, it connects well. You got that feel like you're playing off each other more than some of these things that you can kind of tell were built in layers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And actually this record was in a large part built in layers, but the guys that I do have on the record, I play with them live a lot. And, we kind of have a sense of each other's, our presence as far as musicians and everything, how we play, what we play, we kind of all think alike anyways,
Yeah.
I can actually say that on probably 80% of the stuff that I'm recorded on outside of Kid Rock or Uncle Cracker, Johnny B. Badanjic is the drummer. We do a lot of sessions.
Well, yeah, I noticed both of you guys and Tino were on the Robert Bradley album that came out at the end of the year, the Blackwater Surprise.
Yes. Tino produced that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, I guess, actually it's same label, Funky D, which I think is Tino's label, if I'm not mistaken.
That's Tino's label. Yeah. Funky D Records. Yeah.
That's very cool. I was excited to see Robert Bradley putting something together again.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. Cause he's, I played on his first record on RCA, and then I toured with them for about a year and a half. That was his original release with Belly Bone and California and Coming
album.
Down and all of that stuff. Eddie Harshen from the Black Crowes and I shared the keyboard duties on that, and as well as Robert. Robert plays too.
Well, I was going to say, I know Robert plays. So yeah, that must be interesting when you're performing with someone who's also playing your instrument.
Yeah, because he's got his own feel and it's, you have to pay attention to it a little bit, I guess if I had to compare it to anything, it would be like, say, John Lee Hooker's approach to playing guitar.
Okay.
And there's a lot of folks out there that don't know when to change from the one to the four John Lee Hooker song, because it's not in the obvious spot,
You change when John says you change.
Yeah, it's just like all of a sudden, wait a minute, he just changed to the four. Oh, wait a minute, he's back down to the one. Oh, he's up on the five now, and it all makes sense to him.
Yeah.
And it's very deliberate. It was actually very deliberate to John Lee Hooker.
Well, I feel like I always felt like that was an evolution of playing live and trying to work the crowd and knowing when to work the crowd and when the changes would affect the crowd.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. You got to feed off of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's where all that money was, It wasn't in the albums.
Yeah.
Cool. So, yeah, so I guess you're playing with Robert Bradley or a little bit you did on that album. Are you going to be doing any shows with him or?
I did the record release party when guested on that on keyboards, which was at Callahan's, and that was a sold out crowd. After that, I just have been
busy.
You know, dove right into our tour, the Kid Rock tour. And
I guess that album came out at the end of the year, right as you guys were starting the tour.
Just as we were revving up, and since then, it's been most of my time's been on the road with Bob with Kid Rock.
Sure. Now that and so that I tour have, goes through what the end of March,
and then March, and then we have the Chillin' the Most cruise, and that goes into the beginning of April.
Okay.
And kind of wraps up at least the winter and early spring leg of the tour.
So now you're part of both his regular show band and the Twisted Brown Trucker Band. Is it pretty common that you're playing essentially two full shows a night because you're playing in both bands?
It's really all one entity. Kid Rock and the Twisted Brown Trucker Band is all one entity. So, you know, when we come out slamming, and then it's just our extravaganza rock and roll circus that we do every night. And most times there's barely a roof left on the building, you know?
I would imagine with the lineup you've got in that band.
Yeah, we got quite a large band too, you know. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's been one hell of a ride.
Yeah, and so that's kind of the interesting crossover. You were playing with Robert Bradley, and you were doing some tracking in the studio with him when Kid Rock was tracking in another studio. This was back in the mid-90s.
Yeah, this was, and that's what actually led me to Kid Rock. Bob was in the back room of White Room Studios where we recorded the Robert Bradley record, and Bob would be in the back room in the B room, and I think at the time he was working on what everybody knows as Early Morning Stone Pimp,
okay,
which was still his independent release of his own on Top Dog Records, which is still his imprint. So he would be working, and I would notice him, and I really didn't know who he was, and then we were introduced, and he asked me to, kind of step in and hey, would you lay some tracks for me in the B room and everything? So, laid some piano stuff down for him, and I don't know. I guess I like to think he liked what I was doing. Obviously,
something clicked.
Something clicked, and he was a real interesting character, and I noticed that, man. He was just, he'd be doing shows, and, these places would be just packed. I'm like, wow, somebody that young is drawing that well. So we also shared a rehearsal space with Robert Bradley's Blackwater Surprise and Kid Rock, and I would show up for the Robert Bradley rehearsals a little bit early, and he'd be finishing up his rehearsals, and I just fire up my rig and start jamming along with what he's like, hey man, why don't you, if you're not on the road, you want to jump in on some of my live shows, and play those too. And I'm like, absolutely, man. I had been kind of doing that around Detroit for a few years, just playing with anybody and everybody who wanted me, doing it rather selectively, not just jumping at everything.
Sure.
But that was something that interested me, and I wasn't really, I hadn't seen one of his big shows, and I really enjoyed his music and everything, and I jumped in on that. It was a great fit because I could just groove and basically almost like playing in James Brown's band or something, just groove along with what he was doing, and I very much felt it. And, laying R&B B3 and piano stuff and some synth stuff, fit very well into it. And it was almost, it was jamming and everything. And I loved it. I wasn't prepared for taking it back to that 1970s era Kiss variety show with pyro and all of that. And I'm like, on stage and seeing this for the first time as I'm up there performing with them, you know?
Yeah, as you're in the middle of it.
And I'm in the middle of it. And, yeah. And of course, I mean, they're not doing it, you know, they're kind of doing that stuff under the radar. So we had a guy that was with him for a long, long time that he would send him with $200 over to the hardware and to American DJ and say, put together a light show and a pyro show. And he's like blowing all his pyro stuff. He's got no training or license to do any of this stuff. And the crowd was just loving it, you know. So I'm like, wow.
Welcome to the circus. There's your stage.
Right, exactly. And that's how it started. I've been there ever since.
Well, that's pretty cool. I mean, it's you've got a variety of styles under your belt, too, which is great. I mean, like I said, it comes through in the album, but that had to be a lot of fun being able to jump in and play, you know, almost everything.
Yeah, because, you know, as much as being doing hip-hop stuff and what was on his first couple of records, you know, Grit Sandwiches for Breakfast, which was on Jive, and then mm-hmm. And then he had the Polyfuse Method and Early Morning Stone Pimp. He also wanted to, we were throwing in straight up Bob Seger style, Foghat style rock and roll songs and doing all of that stuff. And that was, you know, even though they're not on those records, we were going there live playing all kinds of stuff. I mean, it was a blast.
I imagine. You get to really stretch out and have a lot of fun in that.
Yeah. Yeah, we did.
And pull the audience with you.
Yep. Oh yeah, absolutely. And that's the other thing too, is like, all right, so we're playing the first show I ever played with him was in Detroit at the State Theater, which is now the Fillmore in Detroit. So you're talking like pretty close to 3,000, and this place was sold out, you know? I'm like, okay, he's got something going yeah. on here, man.
That's a pretty good first step.
Yeah. Good first step. I mean, he definitely was making a lot of noise long before he was signed to Atlantic Records.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's got to be great for you, though. I mean, you're walking into something that's not only solid, but it's a lot of fun, and it's blowing up like crazy.
So, I mean, yeah,
talk so about grabbing it at the right time.
Yeah, yeah. I was very fortunate. I was very fortunate. There's a lot of... There's a lot to be said about being at the right place at the right time.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's, and that's like, I kind of wonder about this, like that happened because you've got that music scene where there's some overlap going on and there were very different styles happening in the same studio. I know like with the scene that's currently going on here in Baltimore, there's a whole lot of different styles. We've got everything from death metal to bluegrass, but a lot of these guys are tremendously supportive of each other. You know, it's not a nasty scene. And I kind of wonder when I see those guys playing on your new album and the connectivity that you have. I mean, it's been like, you know, probably 15 years since I was in Detroit last, and it was pretty much a mess at that point. But everybody I met was super positive and all about Detroit. And I kind of wondered from that and seeing what you've got on your album, like, is that music scene really supportive and cross-connected like that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Very much so. You'll see shows where people will be jumping on, you know, each other's gigs and sometimes somebody's not available because they're over here right. and this and that. So yeah, we do have, you know, unfortunately, Detroit isn't an industry town. By industry, I mean the music industry as right. much, but it's definitely culturally and talent-wise a musical melting pot and just a gigantic stew of great players, great ingredients that can come out with masterpieces, you know. Well, I guess that's the best way that I can describe it.
I mean, in a fantastic lineage of funk and soul and R&B.
Yeah, and
hip hop and
yeah. And I was talking about this to somebody yesterday who's very, very high up in the industry, and she was saying, you know, really, it's surprising because if you can say you're from Detroit, it automatically grabs attention because it lends itself to a certain amount of credibility, just that. Mm-hmm. And I says, yeah, you're absolutely right. I'm very, very influenced by the Motown stuff and the pre-Motown, the Fortune Records, mm-hmm. you know, the stuff that was coming out on Fortune Records, and then, you know, Big Maceo Merriweather recorded sure. on, you know, who was Otis Spann's, you know, mentor. He recorded on Fortune Records at one time, you know, Nathaniel Mayer, you know, Village of Love, stuff like that, man. Great stuff. The let's call it the rock and roll era.
Yeah.
Stuff,
well, the bedrock of all of this.
Yeah, absolutely, mm-hmm. man. You know, the Elvis and the Carl Perkins and, you know, the doo-wop stuff and everything. There was so much going on even back then.
Well, I think, you know, that's that you find that history in towns that have been hardworking industrial towns, you know?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, you had the same thing growing up through Chicago and, you know, Detroit, mm-hmm. there were cities that pulled people from the South into that industrial and it mm-hmm. built that bedrock of incredible music.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of these great musicians were doing that at the same time they were working in the auto plants or whatever the industry is from that town. So that grit comes out of what you're doing all day, and then it translates into your playing and into your music.
For sure.
Very yeah. much so.
Everybody was trying to get one piece at a time, right?
Yeah.
build your Cadillac
at home. And then the cream rises from the top, and then, you know, like, you know, what really the Funk Brothers in Detroit, those guys were doing that, and Berry Gordy's like, okay, I'm going to be paying you guys just to play, so you don't have to go work in the right. auto industry. You know, you don't have to, you can leave your job at the auto plant and play music all day long. This is going to be your day gig.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and then
they would still go play at night, you know, right. Earl Van Dyke and all in the Funk Brothers, they'd be playing at Baker's Keyboard Lounge or where, you know, all these different places that they used to gig at, you know.
Yeah, that's those guys. I mean, I saw that same kind of thing happen with the guys in the Wrecking Crew out in L.A. They'd be in the studio all day long, and then be out till 4 a.m. playing gigs, and then back in the studio again the next day. And
that's when you know that's what you are and
that,
who you
that
are.
That is absolutely a musician.
Yes, yeah. sir.
So it kind of brings me back to one simple question. You've got this great album. You're touring with Kid Rock now.
Thank you.
That's going to end in March. Mm-hmm. I feel like the answer is going to be yes, that you have a lot of outtakes and other material that didn't make it onto this album. And so
yeah.
what have we got coming up? Are you going to get out on the road with this band?
I am definitely going out. Actually, I've been just in the last couple of days getting busy trying to fill up some downtime. You know, that we have with Kid Rock. So I'm going to be heading out and doing live shows. And we're heading into a good time of year, too, because with summertime, there's a lot of the blues festivals, sure. outdoor festivals start jumping in on those. And then what I also have going on, you know, my band is the Snake Bit Wanderers. Mm-hmm. And that's my Detroit guys that when I'm home, you know, we go out and gig, but I've got on the Kid Rock tour 4 or 5 guys. And there's a lot of guys in the touring industry that are, you know, crew members or whatever. I've got 4 or 5 guys. One of them happens to be my keyboard tech, who's also Stephanie Uhlenberg's drum tech, who's an amazing drummer. And then our video chief, who runs all of our big video stuff, his name is Bill Crooks, ridiculous guitar player. And then one of the other guys with manning the cameras is Keith Graves, bass player, who has played with the Jefferson Starship.
It's an awful lot of talent
so
on the tech crew.
I told these guys, I'm like, I was doing some, at the beginning of this tour, I did some television, and we opened the tour in Grand Rapids, Michigan at Van Andel Arena. And I got the opportunity to go on and do some morning television just myself and then our percussionist Larry Fratangelo on cajon, where I'm playing piano and just singing my stuff. Mm-hmm. And I did that on Fox and I did it on NBC, you know, doing my own stuff.
Right.
And I've gotten the idea, I'm like, man, I got all these great players. It'd be great if I could get these guys, if it was an off night or an off morning or something, go on television, take them to back me up. Then I tell the few of them, like, put together a band of your best players out here and learn my record. And if you guys got stuff, we'll learn that too. So what we can have out of that, we've been doing a little rehearsing and we're starting to get some shows up in the cities where we're going to be, let's say, be playing that next Friday.
Right.
You know, so it's basically we're just going to find a bar, you know, five guys walk into a bar and take over, you know. And because it's Bill Crooks is our head of video, it's going to be Jimmy Bones and the Crooks.
Nice.
Yeah. So we've actually been hitting with that. And it's a little bit of a different flavor than my band. Yeah. And it's funny to see how, all right, I got a different group of musicians and the dynamics that the songs can take with different players on it. And it's very interesting. I love that.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a pretty wild crew to have to be able to put together, guys that are already out touring with you, but on the mm-hmm. other side of the camera and the mics.
Yeah. Well, then they're chomping at the bit. They're yeah. like, Bones, when are we going to book some shows? We got to book some shows.
I'm getting tired of working the lights. I want to be out in front of them.
Yeah. And they're all great players. And I have, you know, Bill Crooks, our guitar player, you know, and video chief, he's been out with us for, you know, quite a few years now. And he records too while he's out on the road. He's got his Pro Tools rig and everything. And, you know, there's been more than one occasion when he's asked me to lay some piano or organ on his stuff, and I do that. And he puts out some really cool stuff. Very bluesy.
Nice.
You know.
So real bluesy stuff, you guys gonna you know. Drop in somewhere when you're here in Baltimore on March 3rd?
actually, I won't be. I'll be flying into Baltimore and then flying out then.
Oh, well. Next time through.
Yeah. That, if I get a chance to be able to do that, I definitely will.
So, is there some thought that at the end of March, end of April, I guess, when you're done with this tour, that you guys will all go out? You're going to keep trying to just drop them in?
I'll start doing dates with the guys that I have in Detroit with the Snake Pit Wanderers. And the other thing is I've already got, like you said, I've got a lot of stuff that didn't make that record, stuff that I was just starting to write, stuff that I've finished writing in the meantime. Mm-hmm. And my next thing is I'll probably get right back in the studio and throw a put out a 5-song EP.
Okay.
Is what I want to do.
I mean, this stuff lends itself to my ear. This stuff lends itself to making an awfully good live recording. Like you could get something going in one of the clubs when you're playing. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny that you say that because all of the songs, we're down to mix and I'm like, man, these are like good single length, you know, like 60s radio single length, you know, stuff. They're all 3 minutes, slightly over 3 minutes or slightly under 3 minutes. When we do them live and then it's just like, all right, you know, like, okay, let's double up on the solos. Let's throw solos. Let's throw a sax solo in here. Some of these songs end up being like 10 minute jams.
Yeah. Stretch them out and have some fun with them.
Absolutely, yeah. With that, I think the entire record is slightly less than an hour. I can do almost a 2-hour show.
Wow.
You know.
Well, you know, you go back in and you cut the EP, and then you add, you know, 4 or 5 tracks that you record on the road.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And then absolutely. Then you got a full length with bonus tracks.
Yep. Keep it going. Yeah. Man. Just keep churning it out.
So I did have, and I want to drop back just because we talked about this a little bit before we got started. I wanted to ask you about the R.L. Burnside album.
Yeah.
That kind of goes back to the studio thing. the album was A Bothered Mind, and it came out after R.L. had had a heart attack and was having a lot of health problems. And if I'm not mistaken, he didn't record new guitar work for that. It was almost all stuff he had previously recorded that hadn't been used. And so you guys got in there and remixed it and added other things, and Kid Rock and Lyrics Born did some rap on it, and it's a really interesting blend of styles. And I know, like, there, some purists got pretty uptight about it, and some people thought it was phenomenal. It's kind of all over, you know. There was no gray area for people on that.
As expected.
yeah. But, like, you know, as we were saying earlier, it's like when Madlib was handed the keys to the Blue Note Jazz Studio. You know, you don't know what's going to happen, but you know it's going to be interesting. I think that was, maybe it was a little daring of Fat Possum. Maybe it was a little daring of RL himself to put that stuff out there like that. But it had to have been fun, and
it was, you know, it was fun. It was a great opportunity, and it really got Tino Gross and I rolling together as a bit of a production team. The way it went down is I was approached by Matthew Johnson of Fat Possum Records. And he's like, you know, I've got an artist, and, you know, R.L. Bernstein. I'm like, oh my God, are you kidding me, man? He's a legend.
Yeah, I think I've heard of him.
Yeah, you know. Hey, I got this guy, R.L. Burnside. I was like, okay, yeah. Yes, I have. I know exactly who R.L. Burnside is, you know. And it's like, and just kind of just what you said, you know. I don't know if he can undergo the rigors of putting out another record, but he wants to do another record. And, you know, and we also want to have some fresh takes on it and some writing and that. Can you do it? And I'm like, I don't have a studio myself, but I got the perfect guy with the perfect sensibilities, meaning Tino, you know. And I said, you know, described him, you know, he's like an encyclopedia of the blues, and all, you know, jazz and roots music. He played drums for Johnny Johnson. He played drums a little bit for John Lee Hooker.
Wow.
At one point. He played, there's Big Walter Horton records with him drumming on them. I introduced him to Peter Wolf, and it was like they were meeting themselves for the first time. a lot of similarities in personalities and just their backgrounds and everything. So I says, let me see if we can get involved in this. And we produced a few demos. And what we did is we kind of, you know, almost took that hip-hop approach to it, where, okay, let's take some of the old recordings and start splicing some stuff out and put together some bed tracks. And then we're going to jam over them. And some of them were just outright, I went in and jammed and started laying grooves. My Name Is Robert Too is a good example, which is one that Kid Rock actually guested on. That piano groove, that Wurlitzer groove, you know, that was the beginning of it. And then Tino started playing drums over it, and we started adding some bass, you know. Glory Be is another one. And that's got a little bit more of a kind of a country blues, almost Memphis kind of vibe to it. And Tony Gagné heard it, and he jumped on that. He's like, I want to be on this track right here, man. This is ridiculous. So we put that record together largely in the same way we did my record, you know? And then went down to Mississippi and had RL, you know, do some vocals on everything too. So yeah, there is some fresh vocals on it, you know. Lazy MF, or I don't know how far I can go with the language on here. That was recorded. The track was done, and I had laid down this piano groove, and he was listening to it, and they're sitting in the back of a car. I wasn't present at the time because I was out on the road. They're sitting in the back of a car with a tape recorder. He's like, turn that tape recorder on. And he just started laying that down to the track, and Tino recorded it and put it in, you know.
Nice.
you better have my money.
That's right. So I guess we can safely say that RL enjoyed the album too.
Yes, he did, and you know, sadly, it was the last record of his of his life. Like you said, there was a lot of purists that didn't care for it. But if I can say something to that, the ones that Tino and I thought were gonna really, you know, pan it and hate on it, we were surprised when Blue Note Records, or not, when I'm not Blue Note Records, I'm sorry, but Downbeat Magazine said that we're raving about it and said, man, certain people have tried this kind of thing. Moby's tried it, blah, blah, blah. And we weren't feeling it. Finally, these two guys from Detroit have figured out how to do this.
Yeah. Well, that's because you had the roots in it. You know, you had the feel for it.
I think that had a lot to do with it. Yeah. Cause I mean, it was definitely, well, let's call it a mashup, you know,
yeah, right.
You know, to be very current, mashup of the styles and the flavor and the grit of the North Mississippi sound and the Detroit sound. And you put those together and man, you come up with something that, that's a great thing, man. Well, and I'm very proud of that record.
And well, you should be. I think it's a fantastic album.
Thank you.
It's a great piece of music.
But yeah, I'm very proud of the fact that I was able to do a record with somebody like R.L. Burnside,
sure.
You know, and blessed, you know, and
well, I think it's you know you've got a great trail of stuff that you've worked on and styles that you've embraced, and I think that comes through. I don't think somebody who hadn't already connected with those styles could have done that. You know, I mean, you being involved with Kid Rock on the one side and being involved with Robert Bradley on the other side and all the things that you did in between, really, I think it's what shows on this album, on your album also, is that you've got a broader feel. You're not stuck in a niche and you can understand how those things can blend and be something special as opposed to just, here's a piece of this, here's a piece of this, stick them together.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, when I write, you know, I'm not trying to focus on anything other than this is what I'm feeling, and, you know, and when you put out an independent record, you don't know, if, you know, you might sell 10 copies of it, but you feel good about it regardless. The way I am is it's just music that I want people to hear and want to see the light of day, and whoever it can get to and whoever feels it and it touches, great. And if it doesn't, well, hey man, then it's not for you. And you know, it's the same thing with being a musician. I would be doing it with the same enthusiasm and getting the same rush if I was on a stage in front of 15,000 people and those lights go down and you hear that big roar and you get that adrenaline, or I'm just, you know, getting ready to walk out on in a bar, you know, carrying my set list and, walking out there and I get the same feeling, man.
Well, that's the key, man. That's the authenticity you need to enjoy what you're doing, you know.
Try to hang on to that, man.
I mean, you get paid for it, which is nice, but it's you gotta enjoy it. Otherwise, it doesn't come through in your music.
I enjoyed it when I didn't get paid for it. I enjoyed it when my bar tab was more than what I was going to get paid, you know, like a la Jake and Elwood.
Yeah, that's,
you know?
We're going to go outside and write you a check.
And many more besides. I'm sure there's many that came before us where Jake and Elwood's adventure paled in comparison.
Indeed. Well, I really appreciate you taking time to talk with us, and I'm looking forward to seeing you guys when you come through town and whatever you produce next with the material that's not yet out. And hopefully, touch base when you're heading this way with the Snakebit group, and we'll find you some clubs to play here.
Love to do that. I'd love to do that. Come through Baltimore and the whole area and
got a lot of
take that
festivals.
Out on the road. Like I said, I'm starting to branch out after the Kid Rock tour is, sure. And if we'd get a break, I've got some stuff going on around Michigan regionally, but I'd like to take it a little farther and start bringing the circle out wider and wider.
For sure. Cool. Well, I really appreciate it. Again, this is a professor from the Morning Blues on WLOI, and we have been talking with Jimmy Bones. His new album, Snake Bitten Wandering, is out on Funky D Records, and he will be coming through town playing the keyboards with Kid Rock on March 3rd at the Royal Farms Arena. So we'll look forward to seeing that. And again, yep. Thank you so much for taking the time, and happy Valentine's Day.
If I can add, yep. You can get Snake Bit and Wandering on jimmybones.com.
Excellent.
You can get it on CD. And that's Jimmy with an I-E.
J-I-M-M-I-E.
If you spell it with a Y, you'll get a picture of Snoop Dogg.
Well, it's close, you know.
Right.
All right, man. Thank you very much. We appreciate your time.
Very cool. Thank you very much.
Take care.